Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet, 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Goethe. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar-Tor!
Everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 31. What an incredible weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football we have seen. And there are definitely two teams that really stand out from the rest as the biggest winners from a match day that saw plenty of controversy, lots of drama, and an intense battle brewing, especially in the relegation battle. There are still lots to play out with three match days to go, lots to enjoy, and we'll get started in a second. We're going to start this at the Holstein Stadion, Holstein Kiel against Kaiserslautern. Kiel entered the match day top of the Zweite Bundesliga. They knew with a victory, they would inch ever closer to a journey to the Bundesliga. Kaiserslautern, of course, entered the match day in 17th. They had to win. It's been a very tough stretch for them under Friedhelm Funkel, despite, of course, their soon-to-be appearance at the in the DFB Pokal finale. A stunning result in the end, 3-1 to Kaiserslautern, and the goals started with Daniel Hanslick being at the right place at the right time for a set piece, an excellent header to make it 1-0 for the visitors. Alexander Bernhardsson got that goal back just 12 minutes later, but that goal from Philip Kolač just on the break was, you know, crucial in the standing of the game, and it really forced the issue for Kiel, who pushed and pushed and pushed, and they didn't get the second goal. In fact, a third goal for Kaiserslautern. Marlon Ritter getting his sixth goal of the campaign, and Kaiserslautern scoring a vital victory in their quest to avoid a return to the Dritte Liga. What does it mean for them? Well, given results that have panned out over the course of the weekend, they are now 15th. With three games to go, they are in a pretty good... Well, they're only a point above Wiesbaden, who we'll talk about in Group 3. Really the talking point is Kaiserslautern here, breaking Kiel's six-game winning run. And look, you know, they really worked for it. It wasn't pretty, as you would expect. They had to eat grass, as the phrase goes. But they caught Kiel napping. It reminded me of St. Pauli a few weeks ago against Elversberg, in the sense that those transitional moments, the things that Kiel are very good at, came unstuck in this game. And the better quality chances, you could make the case, fell to Kaiserslautern, and when the opportunities came about, they were able to make it happen. I thought they were very good in transitional plays. Ritter was very good in the moments that were required, and a really solid result, an important result. And I think if you look at like the landscape of the game, it's a deserved win for Lauten. In my opinion, they brought more to the table. Ritter's influence on the bench was really good. I thought, you know, Kolač was great. They defended fantastically well in that low block. They made it very difficult for Kiel to break them down. But also the roses need to go to Julian Kral, who had a fantastic game. 9 saves. From the 10 shots on target that Kiel had in the game. This obviously will sound a little bit biased as a former goalkeeper, but you can't put a price on him. You know how vital it is to get good goalkeeping, and Kral has been, very inconsistent over the course of the season, given that this is his first opportunity to be the number one, and he took that from Andy Luther, who's of course now at Bochum. But a really good confidence booster for him coming back from that injury. And it gives them hope. It gives them hope with three games to go. Three pretty tricky games. You know, Magdeburg on Saturday night, which we said last week was going to be quite a big game. And And it still is, given that Magdeburg can secure their safety with a win. But for Kaiserslautern, it keeps them in the mix. Then they get that trip to Hertha, to the capital in Berlin. And, there's two positives from that game. They get to play the ground 2 weeks before they play the Pokal finale. But also, they'll play a team that obviously will want to do well in their last home game of the season. But Hertha don't really have anything to play for except pride. So they'll feel, there should be a bit of confidence in them. They've got Braunschweig to end the season and they'll be in the same boat. You know, obviously both teams will hope that they'll enter match day 33 clear. But we don't know if that will be the case. So that final match of the season is an absolute doozy for Kaiserslautern. We'll see if they can actually overcome what has been a very tough stretch for Freedom Funkel's side. But a really good result, a positive one. Structurally they looked a little bit more solid. You could use all the paraphrases. They were up for it. That's all great and all that. But first win since match day 25 when they beat Osnabrück. And look, three vital points. We talk about the number being 38. 40 points is the magic number to safety. Well, they've still got a long way to go. I suppose the one thing that they should be really confident about going into the final three games is that amongst the teams around them, in fact, they are if you include the bottom half of the standings, they're the best offensive team from teams 10th to 18th. Unfortunately, the caveat is they're the second worst defensive team in the league, and that's including everyone. So they know they can put them in. They showed that against a very good Kiel side, who are one of the better defensive units in the division. But we have to wait and see if they can push on. For Kiel, it looks like they wanted to keep the winning streak going. They'd gone six in a row. They had that massive win in Hamburg last weekend. They seemed a bit flat. They didn't look as organized. They certainly missed both Porat, who I'm a bit uncertain if he'll play the rest of the season, and Lewis Holtby. Remberg is still a pretty good option in that midfield mix. However, they definitely missed the influence of Holtby alongside Zander, and it was just a pretty flat performance. It didn't really work. They still had their chances. Don't get me wrong. They had some really decent scoring opportunities. But it just wasn't their day. Simple as that. And sometimes the defeats can be a good thing in the sense of the rebirth. What they do know, though, mathematically speaking, is match day 33 is pondering as the day that they could go up with that five-point buffer. And ironically, they'll play the team that's currently in third place in Fortuna Düsseldorf. Whether they can win the league, well, it's no longer in their hands. It's in the hands of St. Pauli. But I suppose, gaining promotion isn't always, or winning the league isn't always the biggest thing in these sorts of situations. It's building a team that is ready to play in the next division, in the top division. And, we'll find out later on, should they gain promotion, if they are up to the level. But they've shown this season to be very capable against some very strong teams. They'll be disappointed they didn't win this game. The next three, Wiesbaden, Fortuna Düsseldorf and Hanover, all three of those games are World Feed games. So if you're watching in Australia, the UK, the States, or whoever takes the World Feed, you'll find out that you'll see Kiel for the remainder of the season. Let's talk about St. Pauli looking to win again, make it two wins on the bounce when they welcome Tanza Rostock to the Millantor on Friday night. A really important game for both sides. Rostock, of course, wanting to keep out of the bottom two and the bottom three, I suppose. Don't want to be in that playoff spot. St. Pauli, of course, wanting to solidify their place in the top two and put themselves in a situation where they can gain promotion in the next couple of weeks before match day 34. They put themselves in a really good situation early on. It was an interesting game because, Rostock had their moments in the first half. I thought Perea was really dangerous and he had a couple of those one-on-one opportunities against Nikolai Vasil. The first one was offside. The second one was a fantastic save from Vasil diving to his right to just get a fingertip. But yeah, Pereira looked really lively, I think, out of the attacking options that were available for Mirsad Salihamidžić. He seemed the more likely of the guys who was going to score. But Vasil, who continued on from where he left off last week, had a fantastic game. He's been very solid for them all season. And yeah, look, you know, Rostock weren't like fantastic, but they were dangerous in several moments in the game. And it was a testament really to what they were trying to do to put St. Pauli under pressure. But, you know, St. Pauli is still very strong defensively. Vasil was fantastic. And we've spoken about it the last few weeks. The set piece work from St. Pauli, especially from corners, it's so basketball-esque. It's really incredible how they've really integrated this particular set piece. And it happened last week with the Eggestein goal winner, and it happened again with Irvine's one and only goal of the game. It's brilliant. And I'm surprised more teams haven't caught on to this in the league, especially given that they've run this play several times now. They might have like some alterations, but look, the objective here is Marcel Hartl, who's taking the corner, typically puts the ball in between, I would say, the penalty spot and the edge of the six. That's sort of where he wants that. That's where you want the ball. They have two guys acting as the screener. So, like, legally, they're not, like, fouling. They're holding their position. And if the intended target, which this time it was Irvine, if he can get around and he loses his opponent free header. Exactly what happened here. Irvine goes around the screeners, wide open header. And Marcus Kolker, who was okay in this game, had that good save against Eggestein early on. Irvine scores, and that was your game. So, look. If we're being honest, like, St. Pauli were the deserving winners of the game. Rostock had small little patches where they looked like they could threaten, but really, if we're being honest, like, Pauli could have won this game 3-0. I mean, Kemline had that chance, which was well saved by Kolker, and, you know, we mentioned Eggestein's efforts, and look, they had their moment, St. Pauli. They really could have put this game out of reach. And it can be tricky at times where you sort of leave the door ajar and the better teams will make them pay. And, you know, Rostock just not that team. Again, it's been another trying season of a real lack of offensive output. 27 goals this season, which is the worst in the league. So they're on pace to actually have a similar goal scoring record that they had last season. But so if we're going to talk about what's most important, which is, okay, what does St. Pauli have to do now? It's simple. With a 7-point gap with 3 to play, they win next week at the Volksparkstadion. St. Pauli will be in the Bundesliga next season. The simple math. And Fortuna Düsseldorf are going to be playing at the exact same time. They're playing Nürnberg. The Hamburg Derby, of course, is a world feed game, which makes, of course, perfect sense. It's their moment. This is their moment. You obviously, the Schadenfreude of wanting to do it in front of the biggest club in the city is of course massive for them, and it will be fascinating to see if they can do it. Given that Hamburg mathematically can still make the playoff, they're no longer realistically in contention for automatic promotion. So, yeah, look, it's going to be fascinating what they do, what happens to them. It's really important to see what's going to happen because, you know, I think there are a lot of invested parties that really want St. Pauli to go up. And having a club like them in the Bundesliga is obviously really important. So for them, massive. The next three are all pretty winnable. I mean, they'll feel very confident to get a result at the Volksparkstadion. Osnabrück is their last home game of the season. So if they don't get it done against Hamburg, they can do it at the Millerntor against a team that will probably be relegated by then. And then they've got Wiesbaden away, and Wiesbaden will still have something to play for, we suspect, heading into the final match day. So that makes things even more interesting as we enter through the middle part of May. For Rostock, look, you know, they had their moments, but the results elsewhere, and the only result really that hurt them was Kaiserslautern winning on Saturday, but Wiesbaden dropping points, Braunschweig dropping points, and suddenly the seven becomes really four. Because you think Nürnberg, Schalke and Magdeburg will do enough to get over the line. However, I suppose one of those teams you can put an asterisk on because it's becoming a bit catastrophic. And we'll talk about them in group three. Look, there's still a way out for Rostock, but their next three games are pretty tricky. Karlsruhe, who, you know, are really ending off the season quite strongly. One of the best teams in terms of goal scoring output, they've scored 62 times. Schalke away, they would much rather that game be in Rostock. And then they finish the season with Paderborn. And Paderborn, again, another team that you don't really know what they're going to do from game to game. They'll have matches where they're really not in it, playing on the back foot, very reactionary coaching from Kwasniok. And then other times they'll look to dominate. So, you know, you're playing... At the moment, you're playing two of the three sides, really don't have anything to play for. The game against Schalke is obviously huge for them, given it's their final home game of the season. And they'll be hoping before then that they've secured a spot in the Zweite Bundesliga for another season. It's tough. You just don't know where the goals are coming from. Defensively, they really struggle against teams that push the issue. Set-piece defending's been a bit iffy. And that was definitely the case again on the weekend. It's really hard to predict, though, what's going to happen because, you know, they entered the match day in the playoff spot. Now they drop down. I wouldn't want their schedule, though. I think their schedule is quite difficult. You would feel much more comfortable playing teams like Braunschweig or a Wiesbaden or Nuremberg, Osnabrück. So it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be really difficult to see Rostock get up. But, you know, as we've shown, as I've seen throughout the season, things can change. This is the division. This is the Zweite Bundesliga. In a nutshell, speaking of Schalke, let's head to the Veltins Arena. Schalke against Fortuna Düsseldorf. Massive game for both teams, of course. Schalke looking to... You know, had they taken the 3 points, they would have put themselves in a situation where, mathematically speaking, they could have guaranteed their safety in Osnabrück next week. It's still possible they could do that if they win and other results go favorably. So Wiesbaden and Rostock lose, they'll be safe because 8 points with 2 to go won't match. This game had a lot of controversy. Harm Osmus, who was public enemy number one for, I think eventually it was both sets of fans, but definitely the home support, the over 61,000 that were at the Veltins Arena on Saturday night. I'll talk about that stuff in a moment. We'll sort of overview the game. I thought Schalke were really good in the first half. Similar to what they did against Nuremberg, where they were aggressive in the pressing. They were strong in transitional plays. They didn't get reward for effort in the first half. They didn't make the most of their chances. And some of those chances were like half chances. In general, though, they were really good. And especially attacking down the left-hand side, Zimmermann's quite an aggressive right back, so you can get behind him. And they really love those situations when you can get Ovuljan up the pitch. They also look better defensively, not in transition phase. That's still an issue. And I wonder, should Carroll Gerrits be here next season, which hopefully he will be in Gelsenkirchen next season because there's lots like to him as a coach. that will be the probably the biggest thing you'd want to work on is that those transitional defensive phases, and obviously trying to work what you can in the window to bring in players that can that are not all the same. There's some variety, and you can have a bit more tactical flexibility than what they've got. So you get to the second half, Karaman gets the opening goal, which I think Carsten Meyer can save that. He gets really flat-footed from shots outside the box, and look, there might have been a sort of player kind of in the way, but like the shot wasn't exactly miles away from him. I think it was quite poor on his behalf. But as you'd expect, though, when Schalke get the goal, you know, Dusseldorf turn it up a bit. I think Marius Müller was so good in this game again. He had some absolutely cracking saves. Unfortunately, he couldn't do much about the goal he conceded. Came off a corner. The initial header cannoned off the post, and it took that diagonal across the 6 yard, and Ayo Tanaka, who'd just come on, tapping home for his 7th goal of the season. Now, the game gets really silly with about 10 to go. There was a scene inside the box, the Schalke's defensive box, where it looks like substitute Steven van der Sloot fouls Christos Cholas. Now, this wasn't even looked at, which, when you look at the replays, is questionable, to be honest. And I think overall, like, you could make a case there was a penalty because van der Sloot doesn't play the ball. There's contact. Solis goes down. I mean, it could have been a penalty. I think you could have made a very good case that Dusseldorf should have had a penalty in that moment. And then, of course, there's even more controversy later on. So in the depths of stoppage time, ball into the box from Schallenberg, I think it was, because he was wearing the white boots. Asan Aodrago looks to have been fouled by Joshua Kwasi. Initially, now Harm Osmus is in an absolutely great position. He's in perfect position to see the entire scene. And he points to the spot. Carnage everywhere, celebrations. And, you know, there wasn't exactly like a lot of resilience from Fortuna Dusseldorf players. Like, it was like, damn, that's, you know, Kwasi was probably the only one who pleaded his innocence the most. And the sort of the body language tells a lot. And I think he pled the innocence and you know, you can look at the scene so many times. And surprisingly, I was surprised because to me, there's two phases of contact. I get that the contact is minimal. I understand that, and I think that's you know, I suppose the question is, would that foul have been called elsewhere on the pitch? I would say yes, because it looks like there's some interfering being had here. Granted, the contact is minimal. So Harm Osmus goes to the VAR. VAR says overturn it, and all hell breaks loose. Now, Carol Gerrits was, I would say, a little bit lucky to not be sent off in this game. However, I think some leniency was correctly was adjudicated there, because he'd understandably grown extremely frustrated throughout the game. I understand referees have bad games. That's very fair. You know, I have bad days doing the podcast, bad days at work, bad days personally. Totally understandable. These things happen. Harm Osmus had a really bad game. And we'll see if it proves costly with 3 games to go. I don't think in the review, if he doesn't give that as a penalty, it's a non-topic. It's a non-topic. We're not talking about it. We're like, yeah, maybe. Maybe it's a penalty. And we sort of but I think we're pretty confident in saying, no, we won't give that a penalty. The fact he gave it a penalty... Now, my understanding of VAR might be different to others. It was it irrefutable enough to overturn? That's the question I would pose. Is there enough to say, you know what? No, that's not a penalty. I just don't think there is. I really don't. And of course, all chaos laid loose. There were two players from Schalke who were given yellow cards after full time, which Marius Müller said were very normal for a referee to do that. So it's really difficult. Look, I understand both arguments. Yes, the contact is minimal. I would say the point of contact where Quashie looks to grab the arm of Ayo Drago, it impedes Ayo Drago's ability to make a play on the ball. Like, it's just enough to hold him back. And in a game of small margins, like, it's a massive decision to overturn. Like, it really is. A very brave decision. You know, like, I saw some quotes from Harm Osmus come out today, and they said they spoke, you know, everyone was a lot calmer in the dressing room area. And whether that's true or not, because I can tell you post game, you know, Carol Garros was incandescent, and you know he didn't exactly run, but you know he was speed walking his way to the middle, and it got to the point where normally the referees just kind of loiter around and there's discussion, but you know it's very rare you see the referees make a beeline for the tunnel, like what happened on Saturday night. So, but look, you know, Gerrard said it the best in the post game, like 1-1's a fair result. I think it's overall he's right in terms of the state of the game. I think 1-1 is a fair result, but it doesn't make you feel any better. It doesn't make them feel any better. So you know, he also talked about that 40 points is the magic number, and you know, 3 points from three games, pretty achievable given the three teams you're playing, but still got to get the job done. Osnabrück, Hansa Rostock, and Greuther Fürth. Not easy games, because the first two you're playing with, playing against, both have something to play for. You know, you have to bring the energy. I like the system that they play at the moment with the two up top. You know, top had a tough game, as did Tirota. Tirota had a couple of chances that maybe peak Tirota would have finished. But I think they have a little bit better. They're better shape. The rest defending is much better and has been. And look, you know, they look a lot better. So finally, it seems there's a bit of clicking. However, there's still, you know, job's not done yet. So we'll see what they do. For Fortuna, we're pretty close to saying third is confirmed. Now, mathematically, Hamburg can still do it, but the goal difference is plus 12 in favor of Dusseldorf. The first half was pretty slow for them. They really struggled to get into the game. But testament to Tune, he found a lot of solutions in the second half. I think when Soppy went off, they really attacked the left-hand side. That Solis versus Van der Slot matchup worked very well for them. There is also the thought of, you know, there was a great chance here. Had they won the game, they would have only been 3 points behind Kiel. And it puts them in a situation where automatic promotion's back in the game. It's less likely now. And at the time of recording this, you know, you've got the games that are happening elsewhere. You know, Borussia Mönchengladbach are currently playing against Union Berlin. Then you've got Mainz and Köln. So we could see Köln relegated tonight. Could see Hertha Darmstadt relegated before they even kick off. So that, you don't know who their opponent's going to be. You know, I've said it on several podcasts now. I would want Bochum. Then they beat Hoffenheim. This game's funny. It's a funny old game of football. But yeah, Nuremberg, Kiel, and Magdeburg are the next three for them. Look, they could wrap this up match day 33. They got Kiel. And then they'll play the waiting game, but still a lot to be had. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 matches. We're going to start at the Eintracht Stadion when Eintracht Braunschweig hosted Hamburg. Two teams that had contrasting fortunes on match day 30. Braunschweig were victorious in Osnabrück and put themselves in an excellent position to survive, whereas Hamburg's chances of promotion all seemed all but over. However, contrasting results could in fact change the tide for HSV. They got off to a fantastic start in this game. Two goals in the opening 25 minutes, both coming from Robert Glatzel. Glatzel has, you know, been unfortunate. He's missed a chunk of you know, a portion of this part of the season. And to get two goals was a big win for him. First assisted by Paraba and then Koenigsdorfer giving the assist for his 18th goal of the campaign. 2-0 at the break. We knew this would be an issue for Braunschweig. It's systematically very difficult with the way they play to make haste when they are behind in the game. That's just the unfortunate part about it. So you knew they were going to have to make adjustments. They made two subs. They brought in Findell and Lukoki. And it looked like they'd paid dirt straight away. With what should have been a goal to Braunschweig. However, VAR controversy just isn't too far away. And case in point here, it was adjudicated that Kaufmann, who was then given a yellow card for this, had fouled Mattia Raab. The ball spilled out and Braunschweig scored. On the replay, and this is why I think it was a little bit dubious, did Mattia Raab have control of the ball? No, I don't think so. Okay, then part two of the question is, who prized the ball open if he in fact did have control? To me, it's Muheim is the guilty party in this situation. And you know, I'll probably have to look at it again. But my immediate reaction was that Muheim was the one who pried the ball open. And, you know, Braunschweig scored an easy goal. That didn't count. Kaufmann gets a yellow card. Hamburg then just kind of take control of the game. Braunschweig found it very difficult to find solutions to break down Hamburg. And, you know, they scored twice in the space of 15 minutes. Bakary Yatta putting home for his fifth of the season. And then Ludovic Rice, who at that point had moved into midfield. His long-range effort was too good for Ron Torben Hoffman. And 4-0 is your final score. So, now that we know the Dusseldorf result, mathematically, they're still in the hunt. Like, it's possible. It is possible. Is it likely? No, it's not. And this is like one of those cases where I think, I think Hamburg fans might have preferred for the sort of the easy kill and just, you know, don't make us have to go through to match day 34 where there's still mathematically a chance it can happen. They've got winnable games. If it does come down to the final match day, Nuremberg is very much up for the taking. Paderborn will be tricky. And of course, St. Pauli at home, like they have to be much better than they were compared to their last home game. This is just more than a game for them. This is pride. You know, for the first time in 60 years that St. Pauli are going to be better off than HSV. This is a pride thing. At least, you know, take something away, even if it delays St. Pauli gaining promotion. You know, there's much more on offer. It's like, okay, we might not have gained promotion, but we at least beat St. Pauli, something they didn't do to us. Because, of course, the first game was a 2-2 draw, which St. Pauli were 2-0 up in. There is a lot to look to it for them. Like, they really should be up for the game. And, you know, whatever happens going forward, there's going to be interest for players. There's also going to be interest in what's going to happen on and off the field with what the team looks like next season. I'm fascinated. How they play the game against St. Pauli. You know, how prideful of this team. We spoke about how mentally they were pretty finished as a collective group. They were very good in this game. They knew what was at stake. It's a shame, I suppose, and Hamburg fans might agree with me here. Where was this last week? I know they were playing a much better opponent last week, But where was that level of intensity, the urgency to get to it? The game cried out last week for them to be urgent, not just lump balls into the box and hope something will happen. Granted, the conditions overall were much better to play football properly. There's still the disappointment, though. The crazy thing, I think, when you think about it, there's a lot of thinking there. Should things stay the way they are, it'll be the sixth season they've finished in the top four. They have not finished lower than fourth in the six seasons they've been in the Zweite Bundesliga. That is crazy. So Pauli, Paderborn, Nürnberg, your final three. Two of those games, the St. Pauli game and the Nürnberg game, but I think potentially that Hamburg-Nürnberg game will get changed if there is something at stake for Düsseldorf. Or if St. Pauli and Kiel are fighting for the title, then maybe there'll be a switch. Don't quote me on that. I'm not sure. But at the moment, it looks like it'll be Hamburg-Nürnberg will be that one of the two World Feed games they're showing on the final match day. For Braunschweig, there's really not a whole lot to digest here. There's a real simple formula in whether they win or lose games. And when they score first, they're taking points, most likely. When they concede first, they're losing. there's no plan B. There's no other way of playing. And even though you can change personnel, you just can't change the identity of what's worked for them. They couldn't use their speed. And, you know, as much as Gomez got the goal that was eventually chalked off, you know, it was really hard for guys like Philippe and Gomez to make make their work happen. So, tough end to the season because two of those games are essentially relegation battles. Fürth, they're safe. Life's good. They won on Sunday. That's the away game. But the last two games are massive. They play Wiesbaden, who are 16th at the moment, and then Kaiserslautern, who are 15th. We suspect that heading into those two games, Braunschweig are going to be fighting for their life as well. But how good that, you know, maybe that should be a World Feed game, the Kaiserslautern-Braunschweig game, because there's something to that for both. You know, you've got the DFB Pokal finale finalists in Kaiserslautern, you've got Braunschweig, who one of the original teams in the Bundesliga. So, lots to be had in that one. But yeah, really comprehensive from Hamburg. A needed win. Let's head to Magdeburg. Magdeburg hosted Osnabrück. Now, with the way things were shaping, Osnabrück needed a point to keep themselves from being relegated. Prolong the inevitable, per se. Magdeburg, of course, they need points. They don't want to find themselves on the final match day having to play survival. They want to know that they are safe for now. This game can only be described as just ridiculous. It was a stupid game. It was stupid because there were two penalties given, one on each side, and you can make a genuine case based on what happened yesterday on the Saturday that neither of them should have been penalties. So the first one's converted by Neil Teixeira, his first goal. He's on loan from Sturm Graz. He whipped out the gritty. Obviously a Justin Jefferson fan can relate. The second one, which was converted by Dave Gnaza, like, it's a dive. How many angles did they need? Like, Kleinhansel, who is very good at driving into the box, they slowed it down. So you've got the angle sort of what would typically be behind the goal. You can see him stop to drag his leg and wait for El Fadli to make contact. And then he takes another step on that the right foot, which was the dragging foot. And then he does it again. And this time he goes down. How can we have a situation where that is a penalty? Where Kleinhansel initiates the contact, And even then, there is no real contact to speak of. He might have, you know, El Fadli may have, in standing still, the shorts may have grazed the skin. It was a ridiculous decision, and I couldn't believe that that stood. Like, it's just ridiculous. So there you, that's your scoreline, 1-1. And, you know, both teams kind of sort of flailed around to try and get a game-winning goal, and, you know, it never really looked likely that either team were going to get that goal. I mean, Philip Kuhn was pretty good. Both goalkeepers were quite solid in the game. But it, you know, I know this is going to sound very ranty, and it just needs to be said, like, as someone who has been pretty pro on the video assistant referee, we may need to run it, to bring it back and not run it for a bit. Bring in semi-automated offside. Keep goal line technology, which they're finally bringing into the Zweite Bundesliga for next season. And that's it for now. It has got to a state where it is just not, it's just ridiculous. You wait 6-5 minutes for a decision. There are telltale signs when you know a referee is about to make an overturn. Often they'll go to the monitor and they'll take forever to make a decision. It disrupts the flow of the play. The stadium experience, I mentioned it last week, absolutely shit. It's just terrible. And we saw in Swedish football, it was overwhelmingly disliked to the point that, as in like in a general rule, that the fans have said, no, we don't want it. And we're telling you we don't want it, so you better not implement it, the system. It's not like, I think the technology has a place. The problem is that we have too many objective opinions, too much gray area. And I've said this for the last few years, because it's so inconsistent, and we saw that over the course of this weekend, how inconsistently it was adjudicated. This is where the problems lie. You can't have two referees seeing it completely differently. You just can't. It's good to have someone who might have more camera angles, a bit more better access than the actual on-field referee. But if he's providing decisions that aren't actually helpful or controversial or not with the keeping of the rules, we have problems. And it was just awful. Like, both of these penalties should not have stood. The fact that they looked at the second one extensively and still came to the conclusion that it was a penalty. You know, this is obviously very opinionated, but for me it was not a penalty. If that's a penalty, then the Io Drago one is a penalty. And the Solis one's a penalty as well. The system was designed to overturn the howler decisions. You know, beyond reasonable doubt. If it is so clear cut that it needs to be overturned, then we can overturn the decision. Not for everyone to look at the monitor for 15 minutes, no one having any idea what's going on in the stadium. And we have 15 different angles and none of them's really telling us if it's clear or not. And then even being more confused that a certain decision has been given. Some of them are clear cut, others are not. But I would say during my time in Germany, there have been times where I just don't understand what the hell's going on. It just seems a lot worse. Result-wise, okay, let's actually get to the nitty-gritty, because I thought Osnabrück were okay. They looked likelier towards the end of the game to get something. I thought Conte was a good maxa burst. We saw Makaridis feature, which was novel. They have to win out, and that's going to be really difficult for them. Mathematically possible, but their goal difference is just absolutely awful. So 9 maximum points available. If they take all nine, it will get them to 34. There's no guarantees that even keeps them safe. They need Wiesbaden to lose all three. They'll need Rostock to lose all three. And they could use Kaiserslautern dropping points as well, or Braunschweig. Ideally, Kaiserslautern, because Osnabrück's goal difference is negative 33, and the next worst is Rostock with negative 24. And the others are in the low teens, excluding Nuremberg. Their last three is awful. Like, they play Schalke at home, which could be winnable. St. Pauli away, very unlikely. And then Hertha at home. You just can't see it happening. I can't see them taking 7 points, because 7 points isn't even enough. Unless they win the next three games, 20-0, it's just not going to happen. Unfortunately for them. For Magdeburg, on the other hand, they are pretty close. 5 points ahead of Wiesbaden in the playoff spot. Good goal difference, just negative four. They play Kaiserslautern, of course, on Saturday night, then Fürth and Düsseldorf. They win on the weekend, they're safe. Pretty much safe. Unless Kaiserslautern beats them. Braunschweig wins. Well, Braunschweig didn't even have to win. But Wiesbaden winning is also bad news for them. However, of course, if Rostock lose... Essentially, if Rostock loses on the weekend, Magdeburg can't be automatically relegated. But they're still in danger of the playoff. But yeah, they'll be okay. Good players for them. I mean, Teixeira was quite lively. Liked him on the right. I think the problem that they've got sometimes balance-wise, Magdeburg, is they've got a lot of players that are very good on the left-hand side, but you switch them onto the right and they're less effective. We've seen that with Atik in particular. They've played him on the left a lot. Sorry, on the right to fit in Ito and yeah, it just doesn't really work as well. Ito's really good as a bench player. And Cheka just hasn't really featured as much. He was quite good early on in the season, but since then he's played a pretty partial role. Let's go to a final Group 2 game. It brings us to the Britta Arena. Wiesbaden hosted Fürth. This game was ridiculously stupid. But what it was a massive win for Fürth. It means that, well, they were already safe. But just that comfort of knowing that, they can enjoy the last three games of the season. 5-3, your final score in this one. It looked great for Wiesbaden early. 18 minutes in, they were 2-0 up. Ivan Pretayan from range, then Nicholas Agrofitos. Greek names are always hard. Agrofitos. He mugged Jonas Erbig to score his first goal in Wiesbaden colours. And then they just collapsed. I don't know what happened in the second part of that first half, but they just kind of threw it away. Hugota scored. Armindo Zeeb scored a brace, and they were 3-2 down at the break. They got it to 3-3 with a penalty. And it looked like a penalty. We can take that. Now, I should say, I've gone a bit ahead. Fürth had a penalty, which Branimir Hugota skied into, over the stands. And then, of course, Pretayan gets the pen. They score 3-3. And then, Wiesbaden knew they had to win, so they went for it. And, I love it when teams go for it. But it backfired. Petkov gets the goal to make it 4-3. Tim Lemple missed an open goal. That was extraordinary. But where Lempele missed, Hrgota didn't. He gets his 10th goal of the season in the 6th minute of added time. And the team with one of the highest XGs of the match day, that's Fürth, score an important win for them. Morally, because it's been a pretty busy and tricky weekend or season for Fürth. The Rückrunde in particular has been really difficult. I think they're the third worst team at the moment. So that's not ideal, obviously. There's obviously a lot of talk of what's going to happen with Jonas Erbig, whether he signs or not, I don't know. it's unlikely given that Köln are probably about to get relegated. I think that would be a pretty fair assessment. You know, someone who's watched enough Bundesliga to know that Köln are just not good enough at the moment. I know no one wants to hear that, but you know, let's be reasonable here. That's just, they're a team that just doesn't have the quality. And they would need a miracle anyway to survive. So I don't see it happening. But of course, you know, stranger things have happened. You know, they might beat Mainz tonight, and at the time of recording this, and all of a sudden, everything's good again. So you just don't know, do you, what could happen in that situation. But it's a big loss for Wiesbaden, who have been the worst team in the Rückrunde. They've really struggled in all phases of the game. It's rare to see them score multi-goals. Such has been the challenges they've had offensively. They're in serious trouble. They are trending the wrong direction. And I wonder, with three games to go, would they dare be... would they dare to be a bit bold and make a decision of coach? Now, obviously, that would be quite risky. I think that would be fair. It is quite a risky move. However, you also have to be pretty realistic, the sense that they're really struggling. They just not as strong. They're not taking up points. And, you know, when you don't pick up points, it's really hard to justify making a decision. So I actually wonder what will happen. I did lose my train of thought. Sorry, I was actually trying to figure out who was the young goalkeeper that Fürth were actually bringing in. Nuhel Noll is who they're going to bring in on loan next season. So you'd suspect Jonas Urbig won't come back. This guy's a 21-year-old from Hoffenheim. So they might be having a look at him as an option. So quickly, Fürth, Braunschweig, Magdeburg, Schalke end the season. Build with Zorniger. For Wiesbaden, they have three pretty tough games. They play the top two, and in between there, they've got Braunschweig. It's not looking good. You know, all signs are pointing down to the bottom three. They sit 16th at the moment. I can't see it. I think it may be the bottom three as it is, but of course next week can change everything. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games. We're going to start at the Max Morlock Stadion. It's Nuremberg against Karlsruhe. Nuremberg are on a very slippery slope. The slope is going downhill, and if they're not careful, they will very much be thinking about the final match day as, holy moly, we need a result. Otherwise, the playoff is in the picture. They welcomed Karlsruhe to the Max Morlock Stadion on Sunday afternoon, and the result was exactly what we probably would have predicted at the start. Karlsruhe winning 1-0. Igor Matonovic's goal on 37 minutes was enough to give Christian Eichner's side all 3 points. It means they remain fifth. They're 3 points behind Haasfeld. This is arguably one of the best seasons they've had under Eichner in what is his fifth full season in charge of Karlsruhe. It was bad. Nuremberg were really poor. They tried something different tactically. You know, we saw Jan Jimmerer play a bit more in midfield, and it, alongside Florian Flick, didn't work. It was that bad that you don't often see the four substitutes at the half. But for Chanuzen and Daichi Hayashi, who was just coming back from injury, Joseph Hungbo and Enrico Valentini, they were the four that were yanked at the break for Gola, Okunuki, Anderson, and Duman. Now, they had a penalty in this game for handball, and the camera angles are just not up to snuff. It's really difficult to see if, first of all, it hits the hand of Paul Niebel. Is Paul Niebel's hand in an unnatural position? Was the sort of the arms on the body? I couldn't tell you. And I feel sorry for Lucas Bennett because that was not an easy situation. They went to the VAR, initially given us a penalty, then overturned. Hard to say. Honestly, really hard to say. What this means, though, for Nuremberg is that in the final three games, it's... yeah. We're at the stage where people are playing for their jobs. Or watching the squads they've built, whether their job will be tenable. We saw inside the Max Morlock Stadion that banners for Hecking to depart. You know, this is season four for him. It would be fair to say, and I said it last week, and I feel a bit pretty much the same, there's just no way he can come back. There's just no way. Either you're asleep at the wheel, or like what are the ambitions? What's the long-term strategy? This team has sort of stuck together over the last few years. It's really Robert Klaus's team from a few seasons ago with a couple of new pieces. We spoke about how they struck gold with younger players like Özgün and Yelch. That helps. For sure that helps. We also have to be really realistic that this team is just not good enough. And now we're in a situation where, look, they should survive. You don't want to say that they're Gonskis. There's a lot to dislike with where this team is at, the squad fit. The goal conceded was just... I know like Karl Klaus is not the most popular person in Nuremberg, given he wanted a contract extension with a significant increase in pay. But you're giving up goals like that, brother. You're hard to justify it. It really is. You know, he's not particularly great at his feet. And look, the Matanovic goal, very opportunistic, good hit. But you're in a great position. You were covering the near post. And there was a small corner of the, you know, given that Karl is not exactly the biggest goalkeeper in the league, far from it. You just can't give up goals like that. Plain and simple. Those are killers. Coach killers. I would be surprised if he's there next season. I think they need a fresh goalkeeper, a new number one. They need a lot of things, really. First of all, a plan going forward, some structure. You know, if Christian Fjell is going to be the guy as your coach, which we think he will, despite that Nuremberg are the second worst team since February, start of Feb. Yeah, they're like really bad. They need change. They need to, you know, you can make a case that they need to gut the team, similar to what Hamburg are going to probably experience. Players will leave. You know, Özgün and Brown are going to leave. What does the team look like? You know, who are you building this team around? You know, there's always the question of if you bring in a new sporting director, then that immediately puts pressure on the coach because it's like, okay, you'll have the honeymoon phase, but is the sporting director really happy that that's the coach they're going to start with? Because he'll want to bring his guy in if it's possible. I just don't feel good about Nuremberg. And, you know, I think next season, should they survive, yeah, I don't feel good about the direction they're going in. And I think, you know, the last two seasons, last season was the wake-up call, and this season... despite they've hung in with Christian Fjell, and I think that's the right thing to do, he hasn't really been helped with a squad that they can't play his way. And defensively, they're still pretty ordinary. 57 goals given up. I look at the goal difference, and you know, should they continue their streak of losing, they've lost four on the bounce, five of their last six. You know, they're bringing themselves into the picture, whether they like to admit it or not. It's also the fourth game in a row they haven't scored a goal. Bad. And they play Fortuna Düsseldorf on Friday night, away. Then Elversberg and Hamburg. It's a rough run home. It really is. you could see a possibility where it happens. It's unlikely, but they're only 5 points ahead with three to go. It can happen. Just be careful. Karlsruhe, good. Strong performance. Really like Patrick Dravers. Really like Paul Nebel. Matanovic was good again. Interesting, they went back to the... They were a bit more conventional with the 4-4-2. Two sort of defensive-minded midfielders in Rapp and Gondorf. And then they made the switch and they brought Burnich on. But good. Yeah, good performance. Job done. They're really ending the season quite well, Karlsruhe. They've won three of the last five, unbeaten in that stretch as well. You know, if they can nab fourth, you know, I guess the question is, do you want to nab fourth? Because it does put a lot of spotlight on Christian Eichner, and you know, there'll be some teams that would like him. Yeah, so he's showing that he can work with a pretty decent group. And I would say he typically overachieves with this team. So, yeah, tough. They got Rostock, Hanover, Elversberg in the season. They're in a good spot. They're in a very good spot to do something. So kudos to them. Speaking of Elversberg, let's talk about them. They were in Paderborn on... When was they? When did they play? Saturday. Yeah, Saturday afternoon. Sorry. Brain fade. Also a strange game. Two penalties in this one as well. A lot of penalties this weekend. Elversberg got the first one. Carlo Sickinger from the spot. Job good. Adriano Grimaldi... Another goal for him. He scored three in his last five. Nine of the season. Then Sickinger gave away a penalty for a foul. Really hard to argue. It was just no ball at all. Obermeier scores, and then Sörlot Conte came on in the second half, and he scored his third goal of the campaign. 3-1 win for Paderborn. Does it really affect either team? No. I mean, Elversberg, mathematically... can still be in the playoff because of their poor goal difference. But they can't be automatically relegated. So 1 point will be enough for them. We would say, yeah, 8 points clear. Yeah. You would say 1 point should be enough in the next three, but I think they will get more than one. Yeah, good game. Like, it was back and forth, lots of intensity. You know, I thought Elversberg had some really good phases. I guess the only worry in the game for them is that they didn't really make the most of their dominance. Whereas where Paderborn, when they were able to get forward, there was a lot of intent to make something happen. I thought Bilbao was really good in the game. His ability to get forward, which is what he does. You know, even though he played just 70 minutes, he really put, you know, Lejeune-Cour, Van der Mersch, Sickinger under a lot of pressure. So I was quite strong in his performance. The Obermeier was really good as well. But a good performance for Paderborn. They wrapped the game up with 15 to go. You know, Elversberg really just couldn't get much going. The lack of goal-scoring threat was evident. You know, they really miss Lukas Schnellbacher. I think that's really clear. Like, Martinovic is... like, he's okay. He hasn't played a lot this season, so maybe that's come into effect for him. But yeah, they'll be disappointed. They got the goal early, and then, you know, Paderborn just immediately responded and decided that we were going to win this game, and sorry. So, yeah, good results, good transition plays. Love the through balls through the half spaces. And, yeah, just it was really hard for Elversberg to make something happen in the second half. That was pretty clear. Paderborn, Hanover, Hamburg, Hansa Rostock, your last three. Elversberg, Hertha, Nürnberg, and Karlsruhe, they get a result. They will be okay. I think they're in a really good position to make the most of it. So, yeah, I would say they should take points against one of those. I probably would say they'll beat Nürnberg, and they'll be already safe by then. So, Yeah, good results. Lastly, let's head to the Olympiastadion. Now, I was there to see Hertha against Hannover. 1-1 your final. Marc-Oliver Kempf from the scoring. Excellent set piece from Palko Dardai to find Kempf to make it 1-0. And seeing Hertha in person, you know, you sort of drift in and out when you're watching games, and you sort of wonder what's going to happen here and there. The assessment that Hertha have very little tactical identity, having finally seen them in person, was super obvious. And I mean this with all due respect. You can't just do the same thing over and over again when it's not working. You can't just keep playing diagonals to Fabian Ariza on the weak side, let him drive in and try and whip a ball into the box and hope to win a corner and try and win by set pieces. Where's the variety? Where's the overlapping runs? Like you had... He in the first half in particular, Riza played a lot on the right-hand side. They liked the matchup against Yannick Diem and you know, Ariambe plays as the sort of the left centre-back. And early on in the first half, it was working. Like, I understood it. It's like, okay, yep, go back to the well. Riza whips in a ball in. You know, you've got the height advantage. Tabakovic had definitely had a significant advantage over Marcel Halstenberg. But why not play through the middle a little bit? Let's try and mix it up. Let's actually put Hannover under a bit more danger by being a bit more diverse in the way you're attacking the game. They were a non-factor in the second half, by the way. You know, Hannover had their moments in the first half. They hit the woodwork twice. Gindorf had that volley, which hit the crossbar, which was right near me. Second half, sort of, you know, they got a bit more urgent, Hannover. They brought on Fogelsammer, who was back from injury. They had Toikert, who came on. And look, as the game progressed, like, there was definitely, Hertha were happy to play on the break, but the way that Hannover was set up, it didn't really allow for just like, oh, we're just going to play a long ball and hope that Riza will play his way through. No! How about do something else? You know, you've got the players. Why not, you know, involve Palkar Dardai? Why not involve guys like Hussein, you know, Schoenhardt? Like, it became super predictable what they were doing, and Hannover were able to chop it out, reset, and go forward. And eventually they were punished. 3 minutes in at a time, Halstenberg with, to be honest, it was just like a, like I, it was caught, it caught me out being in the stadium because it was just a long ball into the box and Leopold, you know, just rose up and headed it past Tjaak Ernst. And, you know, I suppose I was preoccupied because before that there was I'm going to say he's a Hannover fan, over the out of the stands, not the where the ultras were, but sort of the general public for Hannover fans, jumped over and was trying to run a lap of the athletic track. He didn't get very far because one security guard produced an absolute tackle. And you know, if it was Aussie rules, there would have been a big shout for holding the ball. Then three blokes jumped on top of them and they carried him away. I did find it weird, though, that there was like an argument. I don't know, I'm ad-libbing here. I find it weird that there was like, then some reason there was tension between security and some of the guys in the away end. He's not meant to be on the athletic track. He's a fan. You're just not meant to be there. You know, like, come on. Why were you getting upset? And there were some peacemakers who, you know, who did the right thing. Were like, settle down, relax, it's all good. So 1-1 was your final score. You know, the Hannover fans typically were quite boisterous. But man, Hertha were just, there was just nothing in the second half. And look, a credit to Lytle for setting them up in a way that they could maintain the ball. but also should they lose possession, counter-attacking options weren't a thing. Thought Neumann was very solid, because in the second half, Riza had a lot more action on the left. But they always, like, they were winning set pieces a lot. I mean, you know, Hertha definitely were able to get opportunities from dead ball situations. Like that was a thing. What wasn't a thing though was the fact that they didn't really do a lot with them. Thought Zila was fine in the game. Had some good moments, had some good saves, especially when in the rare occasions where Hertha did get forward and they were able to get a shot on goal. So my overall reflection on the game was like 1-1's probably a fair result. But it really magnified the issues that Hertha need to resolve heading into next season. Figuring out what kind of team they want to be. That's big, and whether it's with Pal Dardai or not. Because of course you can make the argument that the times they've moved off from Pal Dardai, they've had guys like Andy Kovic, Jurgen Klinsmann. So they haven't always chosen well. I mean, Kovic was similar to Dardai, went through the youth system as a coach and had, you know, they wanted to play more progressive football. Make of that what you will. So, yeah, interesting to see. What I will say, though, is that post-game, met some great chaps, Liam Callum and Adam, fellas from Scotland, who had come over to watch the game. And whilst we were stuck in the S-Bahn and fans, Hertha fans, and everyone was kind of chanting Scheiße S-Bahn as we were stuck at the Olympiastadion station for 35 minutes for no real reason. It was good to chat football with them as well. Celtic fans, so nice. But yeah, like it was, that was cool. And I did say I would shout them out. So fellas, you know, if you end up listening, there's the shout out. I suppose before we go, and this is obviously a bit of an extra large edition of the podcast, I do want to talk about my experience here. Because obviously, as you guys might know, it's been a long time in the works to come here. And depending on when you listen to it, if you listen to it on a Monday or Tuesday, good chance I'm in the air coming back home. It's been such a good experience. And to finally be able to come here, to meet so many cool people, those who have been very influential in sort of my personal development, but also in providing ideas to how to improve the podcast and sort of work with me in sort of trying to improve the format for the point where, you know, it's a lot simpler for me given that I do the podcast a lot of the time by myself. So it was really good to meet a lot of these people. And you know, honestly, if I named them all, we'd be here for another 2 hours because there's so many of them. But yeah, the stadiums that we visited, the Allianz Arena, the Meva Arena in Mainz, Veltins Arena, which was unreal. Like, I loved the Veltins Arena, just the atmosphere, spine-tingling, and that's going to be one of the stadiums for the Euro, so I think Serbia and England are one of the games, same with Italy and Spain. So if you do find a way to the Euro, you know, one of those games would be pretty good because it's just a fantastic stadium. Leverkusen, the occasion made it special. The occasion of seeing Leverkusen win the league made that day more special than it might have been. The Volksparkstadion, another stadium they're using for the Euro, fantastic arena for football. Just such a pretty arena, and the sort of the build up to get to the ground. Amazing. Hanover, I think, is underrated. It's a beautiful stadium. It reminded me a lot of what you see in Australia, sort of that bowl type exterior. If you'd put an oval and some footy goals up, I would have thought it was an AFL ground. It is a fantastic arena. And of course, the Olympiastadion. Very unique given all the other stadiums I've mentioned. Definitely a different vibe around it. definitely took forever to get to the pitch. But yeah, look, some really awesome experiences, and for those that I've been able to share it with, it's been fantastic. And yeah, as I look at the sunset out of my hotel room, it's time for us to end. And yeah, the sunset is beautiful. We'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.